From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for the first weekend of September 2020. The Brewers are in Cleveland this weekend, and the Bucks' second-round playoff games continue with the Miami Heat in Orlando. Well, after 40 years, its 1980 release, the Vatican declared the Blues Brothers movie is a Catholic classic. It's probably because there's lots of soul and Jake and Elwood are on a mission from God. I didn't make that up. It's right there in the movie. A Canadian man ran outside during a thunderstorm wearing only his underwear and Crocs. Yep, he got struck by lightning. If you're wondering, he's going to be all right, but I can't say the same for his Crocs. Remember when a certain politician thought drinking hand sanitizer might cure the coronavirus? Well, it doesn't. But now you can buy hand sanitizer in six packs that look like beer. This is a lawyer's dream come true. And nude models, yep, bare naked models in art classes are now required to wear face masks, but not because they're embarrassed. Did you know three elephants at the Warsaw Poland Zoo are getting stress relief? The zoo veterinarian has put the elephants on liquid marijuana. Early trials suggest they like it. Really? No, I can't wait for Disney to remake Dumbo. And finally, two guys from Toronto started a men's swimsuit company called Brokini. Just be thankful this isn't TV. On the broadcast today, we have Brian Kilb, Steve Giles, Joel Dreesing. And wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. A bit of a rough week after we had strung a few, a good stretch of positive days together for most of the markets. The NASDAQ down 3.3% this week, the S&P 500 down 2.3% this week, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 1.8% this week. Really on the back of two pretty significant down days, Thursday and Friday, although for much of the latter part of today, much of the latter part of Friday, we did see markets come back a little bit. And so some encouraging signs that maybe some of the profit selling that was taking place has started to abate a little bit. You saw investors coming back to some of the areas that had been worst hit late in the day on Friday. But again, you know, I think you look at Wednesday's peak, which had been a high for a couple of the markets, the NASDAQ down 6.2% from that point, the S&P 500 down 4.3% from that point, and the Dow down 3.3% from that point. So certainly the highest performing areas so far this year were also the areas hardest hit in that two-day sell-off we've seen so far. But at the same time, again, saw some signs that maybe investors were coming back to some of those hard-hit areas late Friday. So still positive numbers for the year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, including dividends, up 0.2% for the year, closing at the bell today at 28,133. The S&P 500 up 7.4% for the year, including dividends. And the NASDAQ still up a whopping 26.8%. And so, again, I think despite that 6.2% decline, a lot of signs that, you know, that tech-heavy area of the market has continued to be a pretty big leader. You know, we don't normally jump right into the economic news, but I think it leads nicely into some of the other conversations that happen later in the week. So, Joel, maybe we'll start with you today. Some significant indicators as we look kind of down the releases this week, more data on employment, construction spending, manufacturing. You know, where do we start?
Well, I mean, just an overall look is we're continuing to see the recovery of the economy almost across the board from the depths in April. Remember, April was the first full month that we experienced the pandemic and the shutdowns and the quarantines. So we're still seeing, manufacturing, construction spending, non-manufacturing industries all coming back in the numbers that we saw this week. But they're not coming back with the acceleration that they had in June and July, or I'm sorry, in May and June. Most of these numbers are for July. So ISM Manufacturing Index up for the third month in a row, but it's a little weaker than it was the other 2 months. The ISM Non-Manufacturing Index, same story. Same thing for construction spending from the Commerce Department. Factory orders Demand for factory goods, that's been up 3 months in a row. But if you look at where the orders are for factory goods now or in July versus where they were in February, they're down 6.1%. They're down almost 10% from the year before that. So we're coming back. We're still not back to where we were in February in a lot of cases, and mostly down from a year ago.
You know, I think one of the things that a lot of that data highlights is the easy gains may be behind us, that when you shut everything down and then you turn back on those things which are easy to turn back on, which can function despite the pandemic or maybe in reduced capacities because of the pandemic, you can show some economic improvements. You can show some employment improvements, which again, I think the employment picture is a pretty big area to talk about as well. But you can show those improvements pretty easily early on. And then the further along we get, the more we're going to rely on what comes next with the pandemic and the more we're going to rely on being able to really fully restart the economy, not just, fits and starts as we've had so far.
Exactly, Kyle. And, you know, we talked, I mean, I remember you and Bob talking in March already about, you know, whether this was going to be a V-shaped recovery or a W or if it's going to look like the symbol for the square root sign or you know whether it's going to be look like a seagull with a broken wing. It's great. Part of it was our expectations were that things were going pretty well up until the pandemic, and so everybody kind of thinks that the pandemic is just sort of a one off and all we have to do is recover from that and everything will be back in shape. But I think especially with employment, that's not necessarily the case because I think a lot of businesses have had not a great opportunity, but an opportunity to sort of reexamine themselves. And so maybe employment's not going to be back where it was. Manpower, the Milwaukee-based employment company, came up with some research that showed that employers expect that within a year, 33% of the employers think that employment will be back to the level it was before the pandemic. That's down from 66% when interviewed in April. Today we have the big numbers from the Labor Department on jobs and on unemployment rate. The unemployment rate, take that first of all, you know, it went way up to 14.7% in April. Now it's back down. In August, it was back down to 8.4%. So that's, quite a recovery there. But remember that in February, it was at 3.5%, which was a 50-year low. So, we're still, for the jobs numbers, we're still where we were in 2015. As far as the number of jobs that we have. Whereas in February, we were at an all-time high. We're still 11.5 million jobs or 7.6% lower than we were in February, but we still added 1.4 million jobs in August. And so it's kind of a mixed bag. We're going in the right direction, but our steps are slowing.
I think for me, it always hasn't been about, the actual arc of the recovery as much as I heard this phrase a few months back, in reference to the 90% economy, that you would get back to 90% pretty quickly, but then that last 10% might be quite a slog, And I think as you look at how this thing's playing out, I think most of the economic data over the past few months would tell you we're on board to get back to this 90%. And then I think the real challenge will be, how difficult is it to climb back from that last 10%? There's winners out there and losers, and what's it going to all look like when you add it up? Where's it going to end up? Still a big mystery,
And Brian, we might not necessarily want everything the way it was back in February, right? I mean, there might be some businesses that are sort of saying, we should have cleaned house a while ago or scaled down or rethought how we're employing people. And so we're seeing that go on right now. One of the numbers that was in the jobs report today showed that the temporary layoffs are going down, but that permanent job losses are going up. So I think more businesses are sort of saying, hey, we gave you a furlough. Now that we've worked without you for a couple of weeks, we're kind of thinking maybe we don't need you.
You know, I think, Joel, that's such a good point. You can start to look at different parts of the economy, like retail, for instance, and see where it isn't about retail coming back or not coming back. It's about which parts of retail are performing well and which parts aren't. And there are very clear winners and losers. You know, Wayfair is down a bunch, Overstock's down a bunch, Lululemon's doing great, Amazon's hiring millions of people. So it will be, I think, very much a differentiation between the good guys and the bad guys, and yet still a mystery as to when you add it all up, what's it going to look like down the road.
No, Brian, to your point, I was just going to say that as we look at the things that Joel was talking about, as we look at productivity gains that have been forced on us by this pandemic, as we look at the businesses that have adapted, the businesses that are well positioned for what's going on right now, you know, yeah, that benefits those businesses. It benefits the investors. There is a flip side of that, and that is that there are workers that are being left behind in this. And so there's an economic impact to that as well. And what we have found over 40, 50, 60 year cycles of this kind of thing, you know, you go back to the 70s and kind of an industrial manufacturing revolution where we became much more productive. We needed fewer workers to do what we did. And not only that, but we offloaded a lot of the marginal pieces of manufacturing. If you had small inputs to a large jet, for example, you didn't need to own all the manufacturing processes for all those small inputs. You could offshore it. And so what we found is that if we focused on the more profitable pieces, it made all the companies that were doing that more profitable as well. And I think we're in a new phase of our economy where automation, robotics are going to take over a lot of the pieces of our service sector, is just one example, where a lot of those jobs are just not going to be around anymore. They're replaced by screens driven by order management systems. Joel, it's something that, you know, I worked on for the newsletter that's going out this afternoon, is kind of a look at, you know, why that's a good thing for some stocks. It's a bad thing for some other stocks. And, you know, short term, it hurts the economy a little bit because you've got people looking for work. Longer term, the hope is you can repurpose some of those workers to some higher end. Longer term, the hope is that, you know, you're in an economy that's more efficient, and productivity, as I think we've said for years now, is one of the most important ways we're going to be able to drive economic growth going forward. And so, you know, I think all of this that has happened in the last 6 months has pushed us into an environment and pushed us down a path that we were headed down anyways. It just took that process and it escalated it far more quickly than we ever thought we would get there. You know, you're talking about businesses who for a decade had talked about, yeah, we're going to put in a touch screen instead of having somebody take an order at the counter. Well, now, you know, and again, I've rolled this out 20 times, but McDonald's isn't going to open up their restaurants to customers until they've got those touch points in place to try to minimize the kind of contact that their employees are having. And so, you know, you all of a sudden are forced to do these things that make you a more efficient business. And again, there are some costs to that in terms of employment. It's why when you look at a lot of the surveys out there on those that are unemployed right now, a chunk of those people don't believe they're ever going back. When you look at a lot of the management companies that are doing those surveys, they believe that a lot of those employees aren't going back. And yet, you know, I think there are some benefits to the underlying businesses as well. So not everything is a dark cloud there. There is a silver lining to some of that. But again, you know, that doesn't do you any good if you're one of those people looking for a job. You know, the big story for this week is just the significant decline we saw Thursday, Friday. And again, need to remind everybody that Friday's decline was significant at its bottom. We did cover quite a lot of ground at the end of the day, but a lot of selling pressure, especially in those technology names. Think cloud computing, think, you know, the Zoom businesses where, you know, we're sitting on a Zoom call right now talking about what's going on in the world. And Brian, I know the obvious question is, okay, so we got some good news on the economy this week, or mostly good news on the economy this week. You know, we've gotten maybe a political announcement about the timing or the expectation of the timing of a vaccine. And all of that should have pointed to, markets that were mostly happy about what's going on in the world around us. And yet, you know, in the midst of that news, two significant sell-offs. So, you know, obviously it's clear that we can't always say, here's the cause, here's the effect with what's going on in the markets, but it seems even more opaque this week.
You know, Thursday was such a good example of that, Kyle. We've been talking for a long time about stretch valuations and whether, you know, how much confidence we might have in the underlying story that would support those higher prices. And so, you know, if you're trying to figure out what's happening on a daily basis and you read the paper on Thursday and you figure the CDC made a very positive announcement, again, whether you believe that or not is a whole nother discussion for a whole nother podcast. but certainly the employment numbers were good that day, and you wake up and you're down 1,000 points on the Dow. So I think, first of all, it's just a reminder that to try and really figure out on a day-to-day or hour-to-hour basis is pretty futile, you know. Then I think back up a little bit, I hate saying that I'm glad the market went down, because that's not true. But I do think when you feel like things don't make a lot of sense sometimes and the market reacts the way you think it should, there's some reassurance in that, even if, you know, you have a couple of bad days to show for it. So not just that the market itself got tagged pretty good Thursday, but some of those stocks we've spent a great deal of time talking about the last few weeks, Kyle, took it especially hard those days. And, you know, the other side of the ledger, you know, kind of the value stocks and whatnot held up really well. So, you know, amongst the carnage of Thursday, you saw things kind of play out the way you'd kind of hope they would. And I think in that respect, because it seemed somewhat rational reaction to some things we've been talking about, I think there's some comfort in that because it played out the way it should, you know.
Well, Brian, and, you know, it also keeps investors grounded. I've had a lot of conversations with clients about valuations. And I think after yesterday and to a certain degree today, to try to not look at a day's trade or a week's trade and extrapolate that into the future, but to have a much bigger time horizon. For those that are interested, the S&P 500 for the last 12 months is still up 15%. So to take that in a balanced portfolio and understand that we all have this a much longer time horizon than just one day of trading is very important, and I think is a valuable lesson for investors.
You know, Steve, that's such a good point, because I you know, you guys probably sense this as well, but when the market is driven by momentum and it starts to get a little uneasy for us, if we're looking at data and objective measurements and whatnot, you know, sometimes people can start to get a little antsy that they aren't as engaged in those parts of the market. And in days like Thursdays are a reminder that sometimes that's, you know, there's a reason why it went down, you know. And I think some, you know, a little wake-up call that this thing can go any direction, any day, and it's best to take a step back and keep your eye on the bigger picture and the underlying data that drives it, you know.
And for those clients that feel as though they are missing out because they don't own Apple or they don't own Microsoft, well, they do. It's in their mutual funds. And I know that we've talked about this on the show in the past. A lot of this year's return has come from just a handful of stocks. The breadth in the market has been somewhat narrow there. But you're participating, absolutely. It does cut both ways, as we saw yesterday. When those big stocks sell off, it's going to pull the market down with it.
You know, I think the challenge, Steve, in what you say is that so many of the investments that we look at have mandates to be diversified. And, you know, that has a very technical meaning when it comes to how regulators view an investment. And essentially, in order to be diversified, you can't have more than 5% in any one stock. And so if a fund that you hold calls itself diversified, it's not going to have the exposure to Apple that the S&P 500 has. And more importantly, maybe you don't want that exposure in your portfolio because of what happened Thursday, Friday with a couple of those higher weight stocks. And so, you know, I think the broad point here is absolutely a reminder that you aren't missing out. You know, I think there's this fear when we see FANG or we see, you know, FAAMG or whatever the acronym that you want to use for those big name stocks. I think there's a fear that, well, I don't see those in my portfolio. yeah, you have them. You may not have them to the same extent that they're in the S&P or some of the other really high octane indexes that are out there, you know, you think in growth indexes. But at the same time, they are a piece of your portfolio. It's, you know, key for us that you remain diversified, that we try not to get too aggressive in what we're doing, because ultimately it's not stock selection that drives the success of investors. You know, we've said for years, the variability of portfolio return, or the difference between one portfolio and another, said in more simple English, is not the stocks you pick. It's how you choose to allocate that portfolio. If you're diversified enough and you're allocated properly, your portfolio is going to do just fine. If you get overly aggressive and saying, yeah, I need a little more of this stock or I need a little more of that stock, A, it isn't going to make or break your portfolio, and B, you're adding more risk than you probably need. And so, you know, I think that's the key here, is there is a fear of missing out. Understand that you have those pieces. And again, you have them in a weight that's appropriate to, you know, your risk tolerances. And if you're not sure what that weight looks like, that's always a question that we can answer. It's always a question that investors can get answered. Even if it's not from us, that data is all published. And so you can see as an investor, what's my exposure to this specific stock? You know, one other thing worth pointing out this week is that despite a pretty significant sell-off in stocks on Thursday, again, I'll say it for a third time, a sell-off Friday morning, a little bit of a rally into the close on Friday afternoon, the 10-year Treasury, which I think is a more important indicator of the long-term direction of the economy, the 10-year Treasury actually rallied pretty significantly on Friday. And so what that tells me, you know, typically stocks and bonds trade in opposite directions, especially over longer periods of time. When stocks are rallying pretty sharply, you tend to see bonds be a little bit weaker. But again, when bond prices are rising, I'm sorry, when bond yields are rising, bond prices are falling. And we saw bond yields rise pretty drastically Friday. We've seen stock prices sell off at the end of the week. And so to have those two things trading in tandem tells me one of the two is wrong. And in this case, I think it is more than likely the stock market that's missing some of the issues here. They see overvaluation, they see opportunity to take profits, and this was a great opportunity to do that. Stocks are still expensive, and so it doesn't mean that the selling pressure that we saw at the end of this week is over. But the other side of that is what we see in the bond market, and a little bit of a rally in rates, a little bit of a decline in the price of bonds, I think is telling that, you know, maybe the bond market is seeing a little bit more optimistic outlook for the economy than what we saw even earlier in the week. Well, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.